This week's episode of Out of Chicago is all about the Chicago Botanic Garden during the summer. We have an interview with one of my favorite photographers, Ann Belmont, and an interview with Courtney Quigley, who runs all the exhibitions at the Chicago Botanic Garden. Well, welcome to Out of Chicago. I'm your host, Chris Smith, and this week we're going to have a great episode. As I said, we've got a couple of really cool interviews. Ann Belmont's one of my favorite photographers for shooting at the garden. Actually, she is my favorite photographer for shooting at the garden. That's pretty much the only place she shoots, and she is great at it, and she knows the garden better than anyone. We'll also talk with someone that she knows very well, and that's Courtney Quigley, and Courtney runs all the exhibitions at the Chicago Botanic Garden, and she is a specialist on the butterfly exhibition. And we'll be talking about the Butterflies and Blooms exhibition at the Chicago Botanic Garden. Now, I do mention during the interviews that we may try and set something up where we all go out and shoot the Butterflies and Blooms exhibit together, and we have done that. It's going to be on August 6th in the morning before the exhibit opens, and we'll have special access to get in there. I announced it just the other day on the site, and if you got back to me and you've paid, you're already signed up. Actually, I announced it, and right away, we filled the whole thing up. So if you're interested in still trying to get in on something like that, email me. We could either add another date or maybe squeeze one or two more people in there. So let me know. Email me at chris@outofchicago.com. And if you're interested in shooting butterflies and doing it without any other little kids running around or anything like that, then email me. It's going to be great. So let's get right into our interviews. We're going to start off with me and Ann both kind of interviewing Courtney Quigley from the Chicago Botanic Garden. And then we're going to kind of move into an interview that I did with just Ann, where she's going to talk specifically about the photography tips and how you want to shoot the butterflies. So the episode is got a lot of great information about butterflies, but also about photographing them and about everything else at the Chicago Botanic Garden in the summer. So here we go. All right, I'm here at the Chicago Botanic Garden with Ann Belmont and Courtney Quigley, and Ann is going to introduce Courtney and talk a little bit about what she does here at the garden, and we're going to be talking about butterflies. It's going to be awesome. All right, here's Ann.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, Chris. It's great to be here. This is obviously one of my favorite places in the world. I spend a lot of time here, and one of the people that I met and is one of my absolute favorite people at the garden is Courtney.
Oh, thank you.
And, Courtney is the exhibition manager for all the exhibits that come to the garden, both in Regenstein and the Jutras Gallery. She does the Nature and View Show, which our Garden Photographic Society has every year. Mm-hmm. But one of her most important jobs in the summer is to manage the Butterflies and Blooms exhibit. And I got to know her first year because she was the hands-on person working in the exhibit. Now she's the overall manager of it.
But progress.
And Chris and I thought it would be awesome to interview you to talk a little bit about the exhibit.
Excellent. All right, let's talk.
Yeah. So welcome, Courtney. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about the overview of the exhibit, the hours.
So the exhibit is open every day, weather permitting, from 10 to 5, and we sell the last ticket at 4:45 just so the visitor can have a really thorough, top-notch experience. The only time we really close is if there's lightning. So even if it's raining outside, the butterflies are still there. I mean, they're from tropical environments for the most part, so they live in the rain, and so the volunteers are hardy, and they're out there in the rain as well. If there's a dangerous lightning strike or wind, obviously we evacuate. But for the most part, everybody toughs it out, and you can actually get some really great pictures and experiences of up-close butterflies and moths when it's raining or overcast. So I don't even say don't come out. It's just a different experience is all. So, yeah. We're not allowed to have strollers or what else is in there?
Tripods,
thank you, in the exhibition. And that's just because butterflies, as we'll talk about, I assume in a little bit, are really excellent climbers, and they're really excellent at hiding. And so we don't want to give them an opportunity to glum onto anything and to leave the exhibition.
Right.
Because as we'll also talk about, a lot of these are exotic species, and so we cannot let them create their own niche in the Chicago and Illinois area. So we want them to stay from Africa and stay from South America and not become an Asian carp of the butterfly world here. So, yeah.
Right.
One of the things that I love so much about this butterfly exhibit, and I've been to many around the country, is that it feels like walking through a garden.
Oh, yes.
It feels like you're outside in a way, and you can get right up close to the butterflies, which is hard in many of the exhibits.
It is. This is unique, and I've been to a number of butterfly exhibitions as well, and it really is a unique experience for a number of reasons. It's an outside environment, but it's meshed and inside. So a lot of the, like in the Milwaukee Public House, it's an interior exhibition. So you've got glass, you've got really humid environments, and you've also got really tall ceilings, which butterflies, as we found out in our research, really like to go to the highest point and also to go to corners. So
yeah,
that's not great for viewing purposes or experience purposes at all. So we have a nice curved dome element to our house, and it's not too tall of an exhibition. So, so with that is good and bad. So when it rains inside, and when it's hot inside. But the butterflies really respond to that, so they feel like they're in their natural environment. But they're not so, you're not 50 feet in the air, you can't see them. So that is something that we were willing to sacrifice to not have year-round ticket sales to have a more authentic feel to the garden.
Right, and great for photographers.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, that's the thing, is the butterflies are a great draw, but the blooms are as well. It's called butterflies
exactly.
And blooms for a reason. They are. It's like Chernobyl sized in there, because they have perfect conditions. It's hot. They get attention to detail every day for 3 hours from seasoned horticulturalists.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't even do that in my yard. So they get ample water. It's perfect. So it is like walking through the most beautiful part of this garden on a concentrated level. It's
right.
Beautiful. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about where the butterflies come from.
They come from all over the world. So we have them from Asia and South America and Africa. So, but that isn't really answering. It's a couple parts to your question.
Yeah.
They come from butterfly farms in their indigenous lands. So we have a middleman out of Colorado, and it's kind of a small world, the butterfly world is. And they're like the only game in town. And so they do all the permit work because it is a lot of permit work to import exotic species of any sort, whether it's a lizard or whether it's a tiger or it's a butterfly. So from the butterfly farms, they're raised on their native plant species, and then harvested just like you would coffee or any other crop, and sent to this place in Colorado where they undergo a certain quarantine, and they stay there to make sure there's no parasites or anything's wrong with the shipment, and then they come to us. So these are never found in the wild. They are farmed and raised just for this purpose, to go to butterfly exhibitions all over the country, not just ours, of course.
And that creates some special challenges for you.
Absolutely.
In that you have to follow, it's the USDA,
we are very strictly inspected, and not guarded, inspected by the USDA. So we work with one inspector in particular, and he's welcome to come out, you know, announced or unannounced, and that's absolutely fine, just to make sure we are practicing the proper precautions and procedures in the house. So if it were, I don't know, all monarchs and buckeyes, no one would care. You right now, without a permit, can order to your house monarchs and buckeyes.
Right.
But since we order species from all over the country, all over the world, rather, they have to make sure that the species are staying right where we say they're staying. So we don't want to introduce something like an emerald ash borer or Dutch elm's disease or the Asian carp that I mentioned earlier. All of these things, I mean, you can pick a genre in nature, and it has been attacked by some non-native species. And so in the butterfly or the moth form, what are they going to do? Over-pollinate the Illinois plants? No worries at all. But in the caterpillar form, all a caterpillar does is consume, 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 consume.
Right.
So let's say we import a species from Africa that loves to eat corn. And we've just introduced it to the Corn Belt in the Midwest. And there's no natural predator here. Now, it's a long shot, but we do not want to go down in history as the Chicago Botanic Garden that, you know, effectively eradicated corn in the Midwest. So we are very closely monitored. We've got checkpoints. We've got mirrors. We've got air curtains. We've got volunteers. Visitors have to fluff out their shirts and kind of look under their bags before.
We have nets.
We have nets for catching. Absolutely. Everything you can think of to keep the butterflies inside the exhibition for purely visual enjoyment, and that's it. So,
one of the things that I really love is because I go in early and help document the species for the garden, so I get to see a little bit of the behind the scenes action. But there's always in the early morning a hunt for eggs.
Oh yes,
and a hunt for caterpillars.
Oh,
and there's
yes.
always, you know, a lot of excitement when caterpillars are
absolutely.
Found. But unfortunately, they have to be destroyed.
They do, and that is the only responsible way that we could stay open or to really to keep. To maintain everything I just mentioned to make that happen. So we've got trained horticulturalists and excellent, wonderful volunteers that every morning and really throughout the day keep an eye out for eggs, which can be as tiny as the head of a pin or as large as a Tic Tac. But they're always on the underside of a leaf and they're always matching the leaf. And that makes sense because in nature you'd want to blend in. So. Oh, I know, this volunteer, exactly. And so everybody is trained to pick, and they can lay one, they can lay 50, and the same thing with caterpillars, which are absolutely adorable, and unfortunately we have to destroy them. Because the net, if and when you come to the exhibition, that we have is an aviary net. So it's got it's made of metal wiring, of mesh. And it's, for a butterfly, you can't leave, but for a completely small and ambulatory caterpillar, you could go anywhere you want.
Oh,
so it's really important that we find them before they get outside of the exhibition. So, did you have a question? Sorry.
Yeah, no. So I think every time I go there, I see different butterflies. Why is that?
Well, we order 300 new butterflies in every week, and that's for a couple of reasons. Butterflies' life expectancy is actually pretty brief. On an average, it's about 2 weeks. In the exhibition, since there aren't any natural predators, it's about 4 weeks. But that is still really short, and there is the rogue toddler stepping on a butterfly, so we have to keep our stock up. We have a minimum of 500, and I would say no more than 1,000. At any given time. And also, where we get them in their native countries, different butterflies are available. They've got different life cycles and different times of year that they are prevalent and prolific. So we have, gosh, as far as quantity, I would say about 800 is pretty standard. And as far as variety, I would say anywhere from 45 to 60 different types of butterflies.
And which ones are your favorites?
Oh, I love them all. I won't lie. Probably the most favorite from the visitors' point of view is the blue morpho, because it is absolutely stunning. It's the size of an adult's hand, and it's just this brilliant turquoise, and it's kind of elusive because when it lands, it closes its wings up very quickly, and it looks very different. It's muted and has browns and eye spots, but when it opens, it is just electric blue. It's absolutely stunning. I like personally the zebra long wings, though, and now they are interesting. They live longer. They live about 6 months, and they can actually find them in naturally in Florida, in southern parts of Florida, and they're just it's a long black wing with a really cool yellow hash mark on the wings. And the reason I like them is they're very familial, and they hang out together on the same branch.
Yeah.
You remember?
Yeah.
The same branch throughout the entire season. They rest there. They eat together. They fly together. They play. I mean, it is a butterfly family. It is really interesting.
Are they there now?
They
Did
are there
see
now.
Them?
I know we've ordered some this year, so
yeah, I've seen them there
so
this
coming.
Year. Yeah.
Oh yeah, they sure should be there. Yeah.
No, they've been there this year,
and so
I think one of the most fascinating of the butterflies that I just. I don't know. I was kind of obsessed with was the mocker swallowtails.
Oh yeah,
because they're so unusual. Mm-hmm. Can you tell a little bit about them?
Sure. Forgive me if I nerd out for too much. Just stop me. Just reeling back. But it is mocker swallowtail exhibits something called polymorphism, and so the male mocker is always the same. That's monomorphic. He comes out. He's got the same phenotypic characteristics. Always looks the same, which is already beautiful. It's this large, kind of a butter yellow. butterfly with a black margin on its wings. But the female is polymorphic, and she can adapt to one of 17 different visual interpretations of the mocker. And I mean, they are really different. So one could be orange and black with no swallowtail. One could be yellow and white with no swallowtail. One could be orange and yellow and white with swallowtails. It's fascinating. And the only reason she does that is to create, is to mimic poisonous species in their native Africa so that they don't get eaten, and then they can have, their progeny will be the survivors once they mate. And I just find that utterly fascinating a butterfly's perspective. You don't think about that in nature. It's pretty cool.
What were they called again?
Mocker swallowtail.
That's so cool.
From Africa. Very cool. Really worth coming out to look at. Every version is beautiful.
Yeah.
Don't you agree?
And they're in the exhibit right now. There have been a lot of them this year.
Absolutely. We didn't have a permit for them the first year because of they wanted to make sure we were responsible in the establishment of the exhibition before they allowed a species like that that is so adaptable to look like different things. So we had to get an A+ before we could get the cool kids in the group to come into the butterfly house, which is totally worth it. So they're awesome.
Well, and I think another big draw this year especially has been the Atlas moth.
Absolutely.
Because they are spectacular.
They are.
With the wingspan of like 10 to 12 inches.
Absolutely. Largest moth in the world. So very cool.
And there is one there now. Mm-hmm. They had 4 or 5 about a month ago, mm-hmm. and they were mating. Mm-hmm. And I think their life cycle is very interesting.
It is. It's sad and interesting all wrapped into one, unfortunately. As brief as the butterfly's life on average is, it's even worse for the Atlas. They live for about a week is all. And they have no mouth, no chewing mouth parts. They eat nothing. They only survive on the stored fat that was acquired as a caterpillar. And so you'll see the female has a really super thick abdomen because she has all the eggs she'll ever lay inside of her, as well as all the fat she's ever going to eat. And I say eat, just consume. So about a week, and their entire job, their whole focus in life is to mate. That's it. Sometimes a female will emerge from her cocoon versus a butterfly's chrysalis and hang on to her cocoon, and within minutes she'll be mated with from a male because they got to get going, you know, we've got things to do, and mating is the only of them. So it's very interesting and very fascinating, and they're beautiful. They're the biggest, fuzziest antenna you've ever seen, and the beautiful pink and brown and blue hues, which are lovely.
They're spectacular.
They are. And just so large, you can't miss them. So, and they stay open all day, so great for photography because they are nocturnal, and they're just hanging out, ready to have their picture taken. It's awesome.
Yep. Yeah, they are. Well, obviously, we can see that Courtney knows a lot about butterflies. She's very passionate about them.
I do love them, yes.
You do. I've learned so much from you through the last few years. But before we wrap it up, tell us a little bit about how photographers can rent the exhibit before it opens. Because Chris and I thought it might be a great idea to try to set something like that up with the Out of Chicago community.
Yeah, this really is a great opportunity for photographers because, like I said, during the exhibition hours, which are 10 to 5, you're going to be competing with people in general, and it is a very kid-heavy exhibition, and you can't have tripods. So if you're interested, between the hours of at 8:15 in the morning, and we can let you in at about 8, that's what's happened every time it's been rented so far, till about 9:30, 9:45, photographers up to 20 people can have the run of the show. Tripods will be allowed. You'll have to work around the horticulturalist, but also that's absolutely fine. It's very easy to do. Butterflies are super active in the morning, but towards the end of that, so you've got about a 2-hour window, and the first hour they're nice and sedentary because it's cool in the morning. You can get great shots. They're not moving, and then they start to percolate and you can get some action shots. It's $200, and that does include the fee of parking, which is $300. We can add to that. I'm so sorry. $300. It does include it includes the parking fee, which is a huge advantage for any photographer because you guys can just stay the rest of the day. So,
right. So you don't have to pay to get into
that.
That
is not an advantage because everyone that lives in the Chicago area should be a member.
Every photographer, especially,
should be a member of the
Chicago Botanic Garden. No kidding. Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It is a really wonderful place, even outside of the Butterflies and Blooms exhibition, to take pictures. And everything is in bloom now. It's just perfect. But if any photographers are interested in that, they should definitely get a group together, small group, bigger group. Again, it's up to 20, and you've got just free reign of the place, and it is fun. You can ask the horticulturalist questions. I'm there. You can ask me questions. It's just it's a wonderful chance to just have the place to yourself.
And we'll bring Anne, and she'll be teaching everyone and giving
tips. Yeah, absolutely. And Anne is, we actually use 90% of our images, I would say, if not 100%, honestly, on the CBG website for butterfly identification for our chart are Anne's, because she takes exceptional pictures.
She's wonderful.
She is wonderful, absolutely. So,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, this has been a pleasure. I mean, I think we could sit here and talk all day.
Yeah, no, it's good. Did you have any questions or any other questions? Or
You know what? What else? What other things are you running? Like, what else should, as photographers, should we be looking forward
to? The moth exhibit.
Oh, the moth exhibit is wonderful.
And it's good timing, and it's good tie-in with the butterflies. The moth, we have a moth exhibit in Jutra's gallery right now, and they are larger-than-life electronic scans of moths from the Sonora area in Southwest America and also Mexico. It's an artist out of New York, Joseph Shearer. He teaches at Alfred University. He teaches art, graphic design. And he, years ago, got into scanning, high-res scanning images of anything. And then he hooked up with an entomologist up there. And they he was studying in Sonora, New Mexico, Arizona, and Mexico, that part of the country, moths. And it is an absolutely exquisite show right now. It's he's printed it all on rice paper from China, which he does a lot of work out there as well. And you see details you would never otherwise see on moths, individual scales that number the hundreds of thousands on a moth. It's only going to be up for another month. So if anybody is interested in that, definitely. And that's free. After you can come in for parking, you can come see the moth show. That's perfect. Yeah.
Well, all this is so interesting because, especially this, it's such a blend of the science and the art together,
right?
Like this exhibition that you're talking about,
and that is CBG's goal: is the blend of science and nature and art. In a nutshell, that could be our new mission statement. Honestly,
that's wonderful.
We've got huge, huge dogs in every one of those fights. So, absolutely, that's perfect. It's a nice melding. Yeah.
One more thing that we want to touch on that's so important before we close is monarchs and what's happening with the monarchs around the
the
country.
It's super important. We just hosted an international day of recognition of pollinator problems here at the garden. I think it was about a month ago. Mm-hmm. Monarchs are, as everyone has noted, if I had a nickel for everyone that comes into the butterfly house and just mentions, you know, I haven't seen many monarchs this year. I remember when I was a kid, I used to see them all the time. And that is an absolutely noticeable lack of monarchs. They are at an all-time low. Their populations have never been this low. They really are on the brink of an absolute extinction for a number of reasons. On the one end, monarchs, a lot of people are familiar with their flight down to Mexico. They migrate. The land that they go to in Mexico has been severely deforested, so much so that 75% of it is gone. So if you take a large thing and try to put it in a small thing, it's just not going to fit. And the other huge problem is the only thing that monarch caterpillars eat is milkweed. The only thing. And what used to happen was the Midwest in particular, so we are really at the heart of the problem here, in the middle of the corn rows where wild weeds would grow, that's where naturally occurring milkweed happened. This is where the first stop on monarch caterpillars' journey was here to eat, which was great for farmers because they only eat the milkweed. That's it. They don't eat the corn. And then they become a butterfly, and then they go down to Mexico. But since farmers are planting genetically modified organisms, GMOs, as everyone knows, they are able to spray the entirety of their field with pesticides that kills the weeds in between the rows. So you can do the math. There quite literally is nothing for them to eat. So not only do they not have a house to go to in Mexico, they don't have any food here. And I know you and I have talked, and you've done this exact thing, turn a section of your backyard into a butterfly, specifically a monarch haven, and just let it go to milkweed. There's no need to plant anything else. And how cool is it to go out and find a caterpillar and watch its progression and then watch babies and watch a monarch? You've seen that, right?
Yeah, well, and last year in my garden, I actually saw a monarch laying eggs.
I saw your photos on your...
And it was the most interesting thing I've ever seen. She was like a driven woman. Mm-hmm. She didn't care that I was standing right there with my camera. She just went from, you know,
stalk to stalk and deposited her egg, and she did it for 5 hours.
That's
I watched her for 5 hours.
A for effort, you know? Like, yeah, that's, they're trying. They're definitely trying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if more yards did that, I mean, it is in the truest sense of a grassroots effort. If people were just to take a corner section of your yard, a small, large, whatever you have to spare, and simply plant milkweed, which is often available for absolutely free from state parks. I know on the East Coast it absolutely is. And if not online, I think it's $3 for a plant.
Yeah, it's very
literally a weed. It isn't not a weed in the sense that it'll overtake your yard, though. And it is beautiful. It is a lovely, I mean,
it is pretty.
I think it's pretty. And it's neat to see the butterflies in action. So
and photograph them.
Absolutely.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's another example. People think they need to go to Africa or Antarctica to get great wildlife photos,
right,
or they think we need to go to the botanic garden, but you don't even need to do that.
No.
If you have this in your yard,
you can create your own habitat just perfectly suited for them. And they're not rocket scientists. They're going to go where they have the food. I mean, if you build it, they will come. So, yeah.
And is it too late in the summer right now? We're into
July. No, monarchs have a lot of different generations. And
but
this
is
has
it
been
too late to plant milkweed?
No, I don't think so at all. No.
I just planted some
Perfect.
A few weeks ago.
Excellent, yeah.
Okay, great.
Excellent.
Great, so we'll do it then.
So plant the milkweed.
Yeah, please.
And they will come.
And they will
Chicago
come.
Chicago people,
exactly.
Yes, do it.
Absolutely, excellent.
All right, thank you, Courtney.
Sure, no
Thanks.
Problems.
All right, I'm here with Ann Belmont. We're at the Chicago Botanic Garden, and we just got finished with Courtney Quigley talking about the science and everything about the butterflies at the Butterfly Exhibition. But now we're going to talk a little bit more with Ann Belmont about the butterflies and about everything else here in the summer at the Chicago Botanic Garden. So welcome, Ann.
Wow, this could go on for hours, Chris.
Yeah, well, it's true. There's just so much to shoot here,
there's
right?
There's a lot to shoot in the summer. It's obviously one of the best times of the year. I mean, I love being here all seasons of the year, but summer is particularly wonderful because we've waited for this weather all winter.
It is beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Now, don't start yet.
Okay.
Because I want to say, and if you guys don't know Ann Belmont, you better know Ann Belmont. She does write articles for Out of Chicago, but she also has her own site. I always find it by just Googling Ann Belmont, but she's got a wonderful site. What's the actual address?
It's annbelmont.zinfolio.com.
And she makes wonderful flower photos, really of anything that you could find here in the garden. And really, would you say, what percentage of your photographs do you take are taken here at the garden?
Oh, gosh. 90%?
Yeah, and yeah, I believe it. And I know that this sounds kind of crazy, but I think if you want to know the one person that knows the garden better than anyone else, from a photographer's point of view, there's no one better than Ann Belmont. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Chris. It's
yeah.
my pleasure.
All right, so today we're going to talk about your favorite things, the best things we can shoot in the summer at the Botanic Garden. So tell us. Or should we talk about butterflies first?
Let's talk about butterflies
first. Oh, my goodness.
First.
Okay. Let's talk about the butterflies because we just got done with Courtney. So,
well, and hopefully we're gonna set up a butterfly shoot for the Out of Chicago community.
Yeah.
Because Courtney has really kind of opened the door for us to do that.
So. Right, and if everything goes right, I'll actually, like, at the beginning or end of this podcast, slip in the date that we'll be doing that,
yeah.
right? That's what I should do,
Excellent.
Right? Be great.
Excellent.
So we definitely want to do that, and I promise that Ann will be there to give you tips on how to shoot them, but we're
right.
going to talk a little bit about it right now. And we actually were shooting them earlier this morning, you
yes.
and I, and just like when you were helping me shoot flowers the other day, you were helping me with some tips for shooting the butterflies. So what are kind of
right.
your top few tips for when you're shooting butterflies as far as settings or anything else?
Okay. Well, first of all, let me just say that even though if we go in before hours as a group, they do allow tripods, but I have never once used a tripod with butterfly photography. I just find them cumbersome. Butterflies move very quickly. You just have to be on your toes and ready. And, you know, I encourage anybody that's trying butterflies for the first time to be patient, to not expect your first pictures to be perfect. It takes a lot of practice. I shoot all of my butterfly work with my 100mm macro, you know, which does give me some special advantages to getting in close. I find that, you know, the trickiest part is with, you know, if you want to do more artistic things, you can certainly use a
you know, a wide open aperture, but I tend to photograph butterflies in a more documentary style because I donate a lot of it to the garden for their website, for their the guides that they hand out at the exhibit. But I want every part of that butterfly to be in focus. So, and the most important part to have in focus is the eye. So I usually put my focus point on the eye. I try to shoot anywhere at an aperture 9, 11, 13, and I find that that will give me a nice background, but then every part of the butterfly is in focus. Now, some people aren't all that concerned about having every part of the wing in focus, but I just think it's more pleasing if you do.
Well, it's two different types of shots. Yeah. I mean, you could go for that one where there's more out of focus, but, you know, even when you go for that, it always turns out for me that part of the eye is out of focus, or it ends up, you don't get the shot that you want.
You have to pay real close attention to your backgrounds. I find that, you know, sometimes just moving a quarter of an inch will get rid of a hot spot. So, you know, again, it's tricky because the butterflies are moving and you have to move quickly. But some, especially in the morning, will be more stationary and they'll pose for you. Mm-hmm. And you can get, you know, 100 shots of them. But that's not always the case. So,
but that point of moving just a quarter inch or half an inch, that's another reason to not be using a tripod, too.
Right,
that you want to be able to make quick movements and be able to do just little movements.
And hand holding, my 100 millimeter macro has image stabilization, which helps immensely. But you do have to, you know, especially in the morning if you're shooting in lower light, you have to up your ISO a little bit.
Like what ISO were you at most of the time?
Well, I mean, I try to keep it down at like 400, but I can't always do that. I mean, I sometimes pump it up to 2000 if it's, you know, rainy day.
I mean, today, even when I was shooting, it must have been one that was in the shade.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, I realized my shutter speed was like 1/20th of a second or something.
Yeah.
Like, I think I need to go even higher on the ISO.
I try to keep my shutter speed above 100. And, you know, you just have to have a steady hand and get in there close. It's great to capture the patterns, do close-ups of the eyes. And, you know, some butterflies are very friendly, and they aren't afraid of you, and you can get right up close to them, especially in this exhibit here. That's one of the things I love about it is that everything's so accessible.
Mm-hmm. The exhibit's amazing. And, you know, when she started to explain that they like to go to corners and everything, I'm thinking to myself, well, they should have it be rounded. I'm like, it is rounded. Like that. And then she said that was the whole point of that. It's really cool.
Yeah.
I was kind of thinking, we won't tell Courtney this, but I was kind of thinking at first that the whole thing was like kind of maybe a cheaper design than something else. But it sounds like it was all for a purpose.
Oh, yeah, cool. Yeah. Butterflies don't like sharp corners. They like rounded structures.
That's so cool.
Everything's thought out in there.
Now, when you're photographing the butterflies, what's your favorite angle to shoot them from? Because you could go from straight above, you could go from the side.
I try to get as parallel to the butterfly as I can. And if their wings are open, I try to get up over them because then I'll get everything in focus. If they're closed, I like doing both. I mean, because the great thing about butterflies is usually their inner wings are completely different than their outer wings.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it hard for identification because you get at home and you'll say, oh, wait a minute, I thought that was a blue morpho, but, you know. So they're very different, but I try to get shots of both open wings and closed wings. And again, try to get as parallel to the butterfly as you can, because then that'll help you get everything in focus. But put that focus point on the eye or the head.
And that was one thing you were showing me today was... just because of the camera I have, I usually do not use the different focus points, but you really recommend use a different focus point because you're shooting up close. If you try and focus and recompose, it's not going to be focused exactly right on the eye again. So move your focus point around and make sure that it's right on the eye.
Yeah, I do that. I do that for all my hand-holding shooting. I use those focus points.
Yeah. They're I'm going to have to get your camera.
Yeah. It's a good one for that.
but the main point is to really, work at getting, like you say, parallel. By parallel, you mean like the sensor on your camera
is parallel
to the wings of the butterfly.
Right.
That way, it's not like just the left side of the wing is in focus and the right is not.
Exactly.
You try and get as much as you can in focus.
And that's just, that's the way I like doing it. Again, you can do more artistic things where, you know, you let things drift out of focus. Some of the butterflies we were photographing this morning, the lace wings are beautiful to just kind of get a dreamy, softer focus shot.
Uh-huh. But there's something interesting about composition, whether it's the butterflies or anything else, where as I try and get better and better as a photographer, I sometimes think to myself, I want to do more creative things. I want to do more complex things. But sometimes it turns out that the simpler you can make everything, the better the shot's going to turn out. And sometimes it's just that perfectly simple shot with, as best you can do, blurred out background that is the perfect shot. And there's no reason to go for complex. But it turns out that I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, sometimes that really, really simple shot is actually the hardest one to get.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's talk about, what are your other favorite things in the summer at the garden?
Well, right now, the water lilies and the lotuses are just gorgeous, and they will remain in bloom through August and September, so it's really a highlight for photographers. Most of the best ones to photograph are in the Heritage Garden. If you cross over the bridge from the Visitor's Center and you turn to the left, the Heritage Garden is a beautiful garden for all sorts of, there's wonderful flowers there to photograph. It's divided into segments.
And it's the one that has the Linnaeus sculpture or whatever you want, the big gold.
And the water feature with the water lilies.
Right,
and
so if you've been, what we're talking about.
But you can get pretty close to the water lilies there. It's good to have a lens with I use my 70 to 200 so that I can get in right in close. Water lilies and lotuses are very tricky to photograph. If you can get a day with some cloud cover, that's perfect. They're harsh sun. Unfortunately, most of them don't open until the mid-morning, and so then you're already fighting the sun. So if you can just find that perfect day where the clouds cover the sun, your colors pop, and, you just fire away. But, a bright, sunny, no-cloud day is
just too
really
harsh.
Tough.
Too
yeah,
harsh.
Chris and I were trying them this weekend with polarizers, and it's just not, it does help, but it's not the same.
Yeah, well, I think the polarizer helps. I think you want to use it when the light is still good, and it's going to make the image better. But if you got bad light, the polarizer is not going to make a good light.
Yeah. But the Heritage Garden has beautiful water lilies and lotuses. They also have, right now, there's some day lilies that are gorgeous. It's divided into segments. Part of the garden is divided into families, like the mint family, the lily family. I think there's 14 of them. And then the other half of the garden is divided into the continents. So what grows in South America, what grows in North America, etc. So there's lots and lots to photograph in there, and it's lush in the summer. Probably my favorite garden throughout the entire year to photograph is the Circle Garden. And right about August, it becomes so lush. It's just almost overwhelming when you walk into it.
And which one is the Circle Garden?
The Circle Garden, actually, when you walk into it, you say, what's the circle?
I don't get it.
It's the outer boundary is a circle, but the inner part of the garden is four quadrants. In the spring, they do tulips there. In the summer, it's...
It's the one with the fountain down the middle of it,
right
outside the Regenstein building?
Right. If you go out one side door of Regenstein, you go to the Rose Garden. If you go out the other side door, you're in the
Circle Garden.
Okay. And it's a beautiful garden for close-ups of flowers.
But it's also, I think, one of my favorite gardens for doing landscapes because it's very symmetrical and it just, you know, with the fountain in the middle and these lush gardens in the side, it just, it makes for a beautiful landscape.
So, I've seen your shots, yes.
So that is one of my favorite gardens. It's beautiful in the spring with the tulips. It's beautiful in the fall. They change out everything. So, but come August and early September, it is just so lush and beautiful.
So that's the Circle Garden, the Heritage Garden.
Right. The Crescent Garden, which is also one of the first gardens that you see when you come in, is another beautiful garden for landscape views and close-ups, too. They've got some great dahlias, some zinnias in there, and the light is really good in there in the morning. So you get some nice shaded areas. So I tend to photograph early morning or late afternoon.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah.
Your favorite times to shoot. Okay, so early morning.
Early morning is great if you want to catch dew on flowers. It's very quiet. It's usually just the staff. You know, you can get in at 6 or 7, and the light is beautiful.
You know, that's a good point. A lot of people don't know that. A lot of people think that, I think on the website, the hours are 8 a.m. or, I don't know,
yeah,
something like that. But you actually can get in a lot earlier than that.
Right.
So you'll come at like 6 or something in the summer, is that right?
Yeah.
That's why all the staff knows you, too, right?
Yeah. And the dew, you know, we've had a relatively cool summer, so the dew in the morning has been beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend to water in the morning, so you could sometimes...
So even if it's not actually dew, it's still...
You can get the raindrop look,
right.
Yeah. So mornings, you know, if you're not a morning person, it's a little hard, but, you know, get some coffee.
If you're a photographer, you should be a morning person.
You should be a morning person.
And a night person.
But don't overlook the fact that late afternoon, the light can be gorgeous.
Yes, I was here last night, and it was beautiful.
It's just, I mean, you just get that glow. So that's a really fun time. There's concerts in the evening, too. The cafe is open until 9, and they grill burgers. The smell will drive you absolutely crazy. But, you know, it's fun to come at night because it's a little less crowded, and there's lots of stuff going on. So another one of my favorite gardens in the summer is the Bulb Garden, which is also attached to the Aquatic Garden, and that's another place where there's lots of water lilies. Occasionally a lotus will bloom. I caught one about 2 weeks ago that just knocked my socks off. It was so beautiful. You know, it's timing is, you know, is everything. But that garden is full of dahlias right now. It's a beautiful garden. So that's another of my favorite places. In the morning, another great place to visit is the Rose Garden. If you like photographing roses, when I first started flower photography, they were not one of my favorite. They're, you know, roses are so common, but if you walk through that garden, the varieties are amazing. And again, in the morning, they water that garden, so everything's
mm-hmm, right,
covered with raindrops or water droplets.
And, you know, we've mentioned this a lot about the drops. You do have a little spray bottle, but you don't use it a lot, do you?
I try not to use it because it tends to look fake. But, I mean, you can do that. But, you know, it's better to catch them. I love, one of my favorite times to come photograph here is after the rain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can still be, sometimes I'm here with my umbrella. The colors are so intense when it's overcast.
Right.
You know, it's a terrible time for any other kind of photography, but it's a great time for flower photography. If you can just catch that time when the sky brightens, the rain stopped, and everything is covered in raindrops, it's really magical.
That sounds great.
Yeah. So another place in the summer that I have to mention, and it's probably one of, I mean, I think when visitors come to the garden, they always want to see the English Walled Garden.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful garden to photograph as, you know, as a whole and to capture the little niches, the benches. But adjacent to the English Walled Garden is something called the English Oak Meadow. And in the spring, they plant it with poppies.
Mm-hmm.
And in the summer, they put in zinnias and sunflowers and all kinds of things that attract hummingbirds and butterflies.
Oh, I know. I always find lots of bugs on the flowers there. Like
yeah,
when I've tried to do bug photography,
yeah,
that's always been a good place to go.
Yeah. It's so you'll see me chasing butterflies, although, as we talked about with Courtney, they're few and far between.
With the monarchs, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen any in the garden yet this summer, but that used to be, over the last few years, used to be a place that I would just station myself, and the butterflies would move in, and there'd be a whole slew of photographers doing hummingbirds, which really isn't my thing, but there's, you know, I know the hummingbirds are already there, so the Circle Garden also has a lot of hummingbirds, so if you're into bird photography, there's a lot here in the summer.
Oh, yeah. Well, absolutely. Yeah. And that's the great thing about the garden is there's just so many different things. If you like landscapes, it's great. If you like macro and flower stuff, it's great. And if you like birds, it's great for that,
right,
too. It's all sorts of things. I want you to give us a couple tips on flower photography, but first...
Whoa.
But first, I want to share the story that when we were here the other day with a small group of people that you were helping everyone, I said, Ann, come help me, come help me. And, oh, my goodness, you know, now that I think of this, I think that you said the same thing to me that everyone else says. You know, they all say, well, come on, you wouldn't take a picture of the entire building. And Anne walks up behind me. She goes, Chris Smith, you can do better than that. And it was just because it was a picture of the entire flower. So tell us how you do things a little bit differently.
Well, I'm a detail person. I just finished my 365 project with patterns and textures in nature. I love close-up work. I love seeing the tiny details in nature. So I tend to do, I mean, that's why my macro lens is on my camera 90% of the time, but I love to get in close. And I think that's one of the biggest mistakes that people do when they're first starting flower photography. They try to get the whole flower in, and you know, I always say get in there and get, you know, think about your composition, maybe put it a little off center, just do the center and the side of the flower, or you know, just be a little bit more creative and really try to focus in on those details, because it's just more, it's a more interesting photograph.
Yeah, and it's not so much that you're like right on top of the thing and just getting like one or two tiny little petals or, you know, real, real close-up macros.
Well,
but
you
it's,
can do that.
but really the thing that I know you for is it's a photo of the flower, but it's a real intimate photo of the flower.
Right. And, you know, I take a lot of time just to kind of look around first before I start photographing and find flowers that are interesting. I don't just go to the first one and say, okay, here's a picture. You know, you look for the flowers that have, oh, I call it a personality, that have something a little different, maybe a curved petal or, you know, something that just really draws your eye. And, you know, you can do a very precisely focused, you know, sometimes I shoot 16, 18, 22. Other times I love to do soft focus stuff where I shoot at 2.8 and just focus on a sliver of, you know, a curve of a flower or something. So there's so many ways to approach it.
Yeah. That's a good point about picking the right specimen, though, because so many times, like, you see a field of all these flowers and I'm like, ooh, okay, I'm going to shoot one. And I see Anne walk by and no, yes, this one. So you got to pick the right one, right?
Right, and there are some flower photographers that feel like you have to have a perfect specimen. But, you know, yeah, I want a flower that's not covered with, you know, grunge and stuff. But sometimes the imperfections are what make the interesting photos.
Well, it's kind of like taking portraits too, then. It's not just, you don't want to always take a picture of the perfect model. It's interesting faces and people that have character to them.
Right. When I was in the middle of my 365 and the flowers were dying.
When was that, about 182?
I don't remember, but it was in the late fall, and you know, and I was kind of in a panic because I thought, oh, what am I going to photograph? The flowers are all dying, and I walked past a patch of I can't remember what kind of flower it was. I think it was a Japanese anemone, and it was definitely dying, but it had this beauty about it that was just incredible. And you know, a year before that, I would have walked right past that flower. But, you know, that project really taught me to stop and look at details, textures. You know, there's beauty in the imperfections, in the even in a dying flower.
And we really need to feature your 365 project on the site. Tell us a little bit more about it. I mean, we all know 365 projects, but you put your own spin on the whole thing.
Well, I did it because you started one.
I know. How far did I get?
You talked me into it. I think you got into the day 40 or something.
Yeah, it might be. I thought that's pretty good.
And then I think your book took over.
I did a 40 project.
But Chris kept saying to me, you've got to do this. And finally I said, okay, I'll start it on June 1st. And I did. And I will say that it was probably one of the best things I've ever done. And, you know, it forced me to shoot every single day. But more importantly than that, I mean, that in itself helps you grow. But more importantly is it, because most of it was macro, up close, patterns, textures, it really taught me how to look more carefully. I mean, I've always been a very visual person. I've always been, you know, someone that looks at things carefully, but that really, really did that.
And what was the theme? It wasn't just...
It was patterns and textures in nature.
And it was all at the garden or not necessarily?
No, not necessarily. I mean,
because you were shooting them every day.
I was. I'd say 75% of it was at the garden. Well, you all know what a horrible winter we had.
Yeah.
There were days when it was too cold to be out here. The greenhouses saved me. I got to intimately know, especially the Arid greenhouse, which is just a wonderful place to shoot. That kind of got me through the winter. But also, I did some stuff at home. I would buy, you know, flowers and bring them home and photograph them. I went to orchid houses and photographs. So you have to be creative in finding things to do. But it was a challenging year to have taken it on. But it was wonderful. I would highly recommend it.
I'm so impressed. All right. So anything else we should talk about?
Well, one thing that I said to Chris when we were off the mics was that in one of his podcasts, I've listened to all of them.
I made her.
He talked about how if there were only one place that he could photograph, you know, if he was only limited, it would be the Chicago Botanic Garden. And it almost made me cry because I was so touched by that because, of course, I feel that way. And I love this place with a passion. But it was great to hear Chris say that.
But the reason is the variety.
Yeah.
That there's so many different things. If you got sick of flowers, you could stop photographing flowers for an entire year, and you'd still find things to shoot every day here.
Oh, yeah.
It was just so much. Like, even today when we were photographing the butterflies, well, I don't know if it was the variety so much, but I just felt that as we were walking down the paths of the butterfly thing, I'm like, at any second right now, the best picture of my life could just fly right in front of me and land, you know, at any time. But I feel like that any time I'm walking through the garden, you never know what you're going to find when you turn a corner.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just like with the butterflies, how they're constantly turning over and there's different ones that you'll see, the garden is like that. And there's never a time when it's like, well, this whole garden has nothing in it. It's like once one thing is done, there's something else going and it's beautiful.
Yeah, I've had people ask me, don't you get bored? Don't you get bored coming here all the time? No, I've never been bored here. There's always something new, and partly that's because the garden changes out things very, you know, quite frequently. But it's a huge place. It's 385 acres. There's so much to explore. I mean, we didn't even begin to touch all the gardens. The prairie is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where I like going, well, in the summer, really early morning.
Yeah.
And, well, it used to be to go find butterflies. I don't know. I haven't done it this year. So,
yeah.
But to go early morning when they're covered with dew and they're still kind of waking up. They haven't started flying yet. So the prairie's amazing also.
Yeah, I'm still discovering new places. I mean, I know most of the, you know, the nooks and crannies of this whole place, but every once in a while I'll come across something new. So it's,
we love it. Well, we should stop going on about it. But thank you so much, Anne, for doing this.
It was
wonderful.
My pleasure.
Yeah, I hope that we are going to plan an outing where we'll all go to the butterfly exhibition. But hopefully, also we get some more Sunday mornings planned where you lead us around to some of the better places. Those have been really fun.
They have been really, really fun. Great groups have joined us. I I just love them. And we have breakfast. We have great breakfast afterwards.
I was just going to say that we are going to go get French toast today, right? Please?
Yes.
Okay. So thank you so much, Anne, for doing this.
Thank you, Chris.
All right. We will see you on our next outing.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Well, I hope you learned a lot from Courtney and from Anne. And really remember, the reason I do this is so that I can learn too. And I know that I learned a lot, not just about the butterflies, but Anne telling us exactly how she shoots them. I love it. So I'm going to use all that information when we go to shoot them on August 6th. Email me if you want me to try and get you added, or maybe we'll add another date. So that's about it for the episode. And I'm also going to kind of cheap out on you for a pick of the week. And I'm going to say that the pick of the week this week is that if you don't have it, you really ought to get a membership to the Chicago Botanic Garden. Just to park at the garden, if you're not a member, well, the way that they charge you is that you only get charged for parking, and then everything after that is free, except for maybe some of the special exhibits like the butterflies or a few dollars extra. But just to park, it's $25. That gets you everything one time. If you get a membership, it's $85, and that gets you in for the entire year for everything. And it also gives you some discounts on other things. If you get the Garden Plus membership, that's $115, and that definitely gives you discounts on things like the Garden Cafe and on all those other exhibits. I think the butterflies are actually free if you're a Garden Plus member. So go for the Garden Plus. It's $115. You get stickers for two cars instead of just one, and you get those extra benefits as well. So that's our pick of the week. You really should be a Chicago Botanic Garden member. I'll also say that you get membership, you get reciprocal benefits to most of the other botanic gardens in the country. Really, I think some around the world possibly. But the one other big one is that you also get reciprocal benefits to the Morton Arboretum. So if you go to the Morton Arboretum and show them your card that you're a member at the Chicago Botanic Garden, you get in free. And I also believe that if you're a member of the Morton, it's reciprocal, right? If you're a member of the Morton Arboretum, I believe you get into the Chicago Botanic Garden free. So if you've already got the Morton Arboretum, then maybe you don't need to get the Chicago Botanic Garden one also. Oh, and one other thing, when you get your membership, you get like a free hat or tote bag or a little umbrella. So you get a little gift with it. Come on, how could you go wrong? So membership to the Botanic Garden, it's a great thing, and that's our pick of the week. So that's it. Please go leave a review for the podcast. Please subscribe to Out of Chicago if you haven't already. And that's it. We'll see you next time.